just out of jail. Write about me. He stops me on the street, bright-colored Guatemalan shirt, luxurious cigarette, husky voice, insistent. Tell him I just got out. I was 3 years in jail. He takes a deep breath, hesitates. This is important. Tell him I hated being locked up. He bursts out indignantly and then shakes his head because the words don't say it. He looks at me doubtfully. It's spring. Some angry sparrows fight over pizza crumbs. There's a cardboard box full of free puppies with their eyes still filmy. A pretty girl talks to her friends and doesn't notice her strawberry yogurt's dripping to the sidewalk. Then she does and squeals. How could I possibly understand? 3 years. Try anyway, he says. You've got to tell them. You've just got to.
That was poet Julia Vinogrand from her tape, Eye of the Hand. Julia is a street poet in Berkeley who has written more than 40 books of poetry, wonderful poetry. You'll be hearing more of her in the next hour and a half. You're tuned to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz and Across the Country. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert North. Why Bathrobes Pierre? Because I'm frequently sporting a bathrobe in political demonstrations designed to galvanize people, catch the media eye, and bring justice to folks who have to sleep outside because they have no legal place to sleep, or because they have made the life choice at this time in their lives to be outside, not to be paying rent, or to be paying rent as cheaply as possible in a van. Julia Vinogrand is a great poet, and you'll be hearing more of her as time progresses. You'll also be hearing interviews with Sandy Perry of San Jose, the Community Homeless Alliance activist who's involved in demonstrations to reopen shelter in that city. All shelters across the state, the armory shelters, have been pretty much shut down as of mid-March, except on a weather contingent basis. And we'll be following that situation as homeless people begin to protest police misconduct and laws that make the very existence of homeless people illegal, such as laws against sleep, laws against being in public places, as were recently passed in Palo Alto, California, a town between San Francisco and Santa Cruz, passed last Monday, the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law. During the usual contingent of interviews from the sidewalk, and we'll also be inviting you to phone in, not to the station, because we're on a loop tape at the present time. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, is looking for us, nation, a place to actually broadcast from on a regular basis. And if you know of anyone who has such a home, give a call to 423-4833, and I will pass on the word to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or, if you find something interesting in what you've been listening to, or something controversial, something you want to respond to, give me a call at that number. That's the number of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. 423-HUF.
Personal poem. People want me to write personal poetry about who I am. Well, who are you? Do you wash your underwear? Do you sign petitions? Do you litter? Do you love? What are your hands for? Do you feel cheated at unexpected moments as if you were stuck with the wrong life, maybe mine? What does your face look like reading these words, or when you're asleep or dying or trying to decide what to order in a restaurant? Do you want to be phony when you grow up? Do you cross at the crosswalk? Do you hang on the cross? Do you floss your teeth? Do you love? Do you hate your work? Does your wallpaper sneer at you? Did you lose a blue and white marble with a crack inside when you were 7? I found it by the drain pipe, but I don't have it anymore. What is it you can't make unhappen, hurting inside you like cancer of the memory? What is it you want to keep as shining as it was when you couldn't believe it was happening? If you show me yours, I'll show you mine. How much time do you spend doing compulsive and complicated arithmetic with imaginary money? Are you on good terms with your scars? Do you remember the sound of a floorboard under your bare feet when you weren't supposed to be listening? Are you listening? How do you convince the air to let you through? Do you want to suffer nobly as a bad film and never wait in line? Can you give me a light? I don't want a cigarette, it's just getting dark. I stare out my window and don't see you. You stare out your window and don't see me. We're going to die someday. Who are you? Do you love?
Radio Santa Cruz speaking to
Skylar.
Skylar, you say you've had smoking problems with the police?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I don't know, you just be walking down the street and they fucking tell you to put it out. It's bullshit.
Are these particular officers or any police?
Fucking just, no, I've only been here for 2.5 weeks and I've been harassed by them too many times.
And how many times would you estimate that is?
More than enough. Just like at least twice a day.
And what's a typical encounter? They come up to you, you're smoking a cigarette, and they tell you to put it out?
They say, excuse me, ma'am, how old are you? I'd be like, 18. And they'd be like, you're not. No, you're not. Put out your cigarette, ma'am.
Get out of here. And they sent me away for not having an ID. They asked me for my ID. They said, are you... Huh?
For true?
Yeah. They told me that I couldn't sit out here because I didn't have my ID. And they made me leave.
Now, what's your name?
Kippy.
And Kippy, when did this happen?
3 days ago.
And about what time of day?
2:30.
Is this Saturday or Friday?
I don't remember. Friday.
And do you remember who did this, what the officer was, what he or she looked like?
Yeah, it was Headley in this case.
Officer Headley. And Officer Headley told you you couldn't be sitting here if you didn't have ID?
Because he asked me if I had proof to show that I was 18 or older to be hanging on the streets, and I told him no, so he told me to leave.
Well, you know, there's no curfew law in Santa Cruz City.
I know that.
So Officer Headley apparently has his own curfew.
Yeah.
I don't know, everyone's
very interesting.
That's what I want to do. I want to get swept.
So did you leave?
Yeah, I left.
Sure.
Just for so I wouldn't get hassled anymore.
Are you have you been around Santa Cruz for long?
Off and on for 6 years.
And how old are you?
I'm 18.
And where do you sleep at night?
Up the coast away from Santa Cruz.
Because you've had bad experiences sleeping here?
Yeah. Cannot sleep here.
What kind of experiences have you had?
Everything from being kicked off of a beach space to being kicked out of a space in the city limits, you know?
By
police officers.
Have you been given any tickets?
Numerous tickets.
I kicked some guy in the face today.
Numerous tickets. $34 for staying up in Santa Cruz County at a beach not near a no parking sign. But, like, since there were no parking signs around the area, and I was parking in that area, they charged me $34 because I parked there.
So we see...
So do you have a license for
thank you, Kevin.
Quarter?
Yeah. It's the scurrilous Patty Long.
Yes, scurrilous.
Evil compatriot Elizabeth Gift.
Infamous
compatriot. Would you like a flyer? You heard about the trial's result today?
Yeah, hung jury. That's incredible. Yeah. And now they're going to retry them again, and that's totally insane and a waste of taxpayers' money.
Did the DA announce he was going to retry them?
Pat Ring told me.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
That they're going to be retried again. They're out of their mind. Out of their mind.
Yes.
Officer Headley, you can fucking lick me where I bleed. Straight up.
It's a strong statement from a person on the streets.
I have to feed someone.
You got to go home. I have to take this man home.
Get there on time.
So bye!
Patty Long and Elizabeth Gipps have long been involved with homeless rights in Santa Cruz. Elizabeth has a radio show, and Patty was at one time on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the monopoly service provider in Santa Cruz, currently monopolizing a vacant locked piece of property out at Coral Street and Highway 1, the site of the former Coral Street open-air shelter, now the site of a fence and a sign, no trespassing. The trial they were talking about, of course, was the sleep crime chain gang lockdown case, where 7 demonstrators were arrested, peaceful demonstrators who had a brief demonstration at a September 10th city council meeting were arrested after a brief demonstration for chaining and locking themselves to the podium of the city council when it became clear that the city council, under the leadership of Mayor Mike Rotkin, was not going to allow any kind of discussion of the onerous sleeping ban law, sleeping ban sections of the camping ban, a law that makes sleeping outside for homeless people, sleeping in a vehicle for poor people, illegal. in Santa Cruz city limits. You're going to be hearing more about that meeting and about that trial in the course of this tape. Unfortunately, though we did record the trial, the recording was not well coordinated with the defense, and it's really hard to hear, so it's not broadcast quality, although we have some interesting tapes, and hopefully at some point they can be augmented for use on the radio. That's more of a hope than a prediction. But the Sleep Crime Chain Gang Lockdown 7, as I onerously call them, on April 3rd, I guess that's going to be Friday, they're going to be coming back to court, Judge Tom Kelly's court, Kangaroo Kelly as I call him, to see if the DA wants to retry these cases and spend another $10,000 or $20,000 and hours and hours and hours of people's time, not just the defendants, but the jurors as well as the bailiffs, the court reporters, the police, the other witnesses, and so forth, to punish people for bringing an issue to city council that city council needs to hear but refuses to hear, needs to debate, but refuses to debate, and most important, needs to act on, but has not yet done so. That's the case involving the most dramatic and visible protests against the sleeping ban in many months, if not many moons. And you're going to hear David Silva talking about that case. David Silva was one of the people assaulted by the police at that particular occasion, assaulted most vividly and most graphically. He was thrown outside city council by Sergeant Andy Crane into a pillar, and Silva is HIV positive, has numerous health problems that have been compounded by this assault, and is taking Andy Crane and the city to court by his account, and more on that as it... More on that now. Here's an interview with David Minton Silva, Green Party candidate for city council, and council watcher who frequently spends time at city council showing the rest of us what's really going on beneath the dry and confusing pages of the council agendas. Today is March 30th, and that's when you're hearing this broadcast on Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, a pre-recorded show. But here's David Silva speaking for himself in an interview yesterday. Okay, it's March 29th, 1997. It's about 10 after 3 in the afternoon. I'm on the line to Green Party guru David Silva. David Silva is, of course, has worked with welfare recipients in Fresno, has run for city council office here in Santa Cruz, and regularly attends city council meetings to sort of sort out the wheat from the chaff and expose to the citizenry what's really going on for those of us who don't really understand agendas. Does that cover it, David?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I do. I've got lots of other parts of my life, too. But that council watch I perform is, for those who can't get information, for the unions and for SCAN newsletter as well. And also sometimes just pointing out to the city council themselves, do they realize what they're doing? Sometimes they don't.
More often than not, perhaps.
The implications are sometimes really overwhelming. What's going on right now is just a general sale of the city.
Sale of the city? What do you mean by that?
Well, it seems to me that it's the city council this year has kicked into high gear in terms of like giving giveaways for infrastructure to support corporations moving in, and they just seem to be willing to waive everything in right now.
Can you give us some examples of this?
Oh, let's see. Let's talk about the beach flat development. They were people that were developing that plan were sent away to come back with various alternatives, and they came back with only two plans, a super plan and a moderate plan. And the moderate plan they dismissed because it would have meant saving historical land sites and creating parks. Instead, they went with the super convention center with turning pretty much all of beach flats into a parking lot and having the city pay for it, and it's the seaside company that will benefit. And that's what they seemed to all go for. And when people complained, and there were some amended instructions from like Celia Scott saying, if there's any place to get any kind of piece of green in there, would you? And some instruction from Rotkin saying, you know, we do not want to end up with, you know, bed displacement. You know, you do. And so there was a little bit of many, but only after forced by the citizenry. I just came from a beautiful walk. It's the day before Easter downtown, and I stopped by Free Radio Santa Cruz table there and found some more information about this trial of the lockdown. As you know, I was what you might call innocent.
Let me interrupt you, David, to kind of brief the seven listeners we have who may not know what the lockdown trial was.
Yeah.
Last September 10th,
September 10th, when the city council came back into session after having its summer vacation, it should have been expected that there would be homeless activists that would be protesting the fact that they did nothing and adjourned last year without doing anything. Myself, I was busy with my campaign, so I went straight from my campaign meeting to taking people home, and I got there 10 minutes after 8, which had been long after any time that oral communication normally would be held. But they were busy adjusting the agenda to move the $750,000 towards late in the evening and taking out the Dakota Bar, which is a bar on Pacific Avenue, a gay bar, which I have I'm interested in there being a nice place for gay people to go without having to deal with, you know, the police protected drug marketing at the Blue Lagoon. So I was there to speak on that, but the police riot that ensued, instigated by the mayor, drug me up in it, and I think it's somewhat intentional too, because I was a candidate, and there was the very next day was the Central Labor Council endorsement. I hate to scream conspiracy, but it certainly did benefit, you know, Michael Hernandez and Mike Rotkin for me to be, you know, humiliated publicly on the front page of the paper and associated with the ilk of just the homeless radical left.
For those who don't know what happened, this demonstration involved chaining down of about six people, actually. Seven were arrested.
No, the word chained down is kind of as strong as tones of
them. People
chained themselves to the rail that separates the public from the city council over to the side. They were not blocking the view of anybody. It was a peaceful protest, and Mike Rutkin himself said, okay, go ahead, continue chanting for 5 minutes, but turned it within 60 seconds into a police riot, and which I was completely clear across the room standing next to Michael Hernandez, and they pulled me into it. It seems that I found out today that Mike Rutkin himself is on, former mayor, is on the record of the criminal trial saying that the undue force was used in expelling me from the chamber. So if the city council is going to be stupid enough not to come to terms on the claim I'm making, my civil trial will be really quite rewarding. It's unfortunate that
What exactly are you suing either the city or the police department for? And what exactly happened to you, David? For those who haven't heard this yet.
Well, I was grabbed away from standing next to Michael Hernandez and roughed up on the way out of the city council and thrown, hurled by a very big muscular Sergeant Crane. You know, everyone knows I'm HIV positive. Everyone knows I have autoimmune disorders. Sergeant Crane's heard me several meetings, you know, explain my situation, and he also had been going around asking questions about me and, you know, why I support the homeless and so forth. So he was already, he knew who I was. And I was, you know, injured, you know, but not only was my rights violated all I did was the petitions that a person was holding up to serve to the city clerk were knocked from his hand when the police jumped him 4 minutes before the demonstration, a lot of demonstration time was given by the mayor. And I just picked them off the floor as a citizen, because to me, democracy, you know, is sacred, and petitions are the sacramentals of that sacred institution. And I picked up petitions and handed them to the city clerk. That's the only thing I did. Otherwise, I was a witness. But I think perhaps, you know, to have exercised, you know, democracy was not the proper thing to do in the mind of certain people who were directing that police riot, including the police officer himself. And so I have a very, very, very strong case with lots and lots of evidence and lots of testimony. I have press testimony. I have police officer testimony of all this stuff. So now it's on court. They themselves and put themselves by perjuring and trying to get the demonstrators to, what did Mike Rotkin say, serve even more time than the law allows. By doing all that and in their enthusiasm, they've you know, sort of blown their own covers and now have it on record of Mike Rockton saying that I was undue forces used, which is going to be the police testimony, the press testimony, and all the witness testimony, plus three videos, plus I have interviews with the police officer himself contradicting himself. And
Sergeant Crane?
Yeah, saying things like, I guess I just don't know my own strength, and the next day saying I never pushed him. So, you know, the man's a liar, and he needs to be severely taken in hand by the Police Officers Association.
Has Sergeant Crane been disciplined by the police
department? No, as a matter of fact, Sergeant Crane was put in charge of the investigation of my abuse. So the internal affairs needs to be investigated, too.
So in other words, he was put in
this
charge...
This goes on and on.
He was the fox who was put in charge of the hen house of his own the instant that he himself was accused of misconduct. He was
misconduct and interfering with the election, interfering with the democratic process, interfering with the right to petition the government, physically abusing someone that has a known disability, and you take your victim as you find him in the civil court. You know, the fact that I have disabilities doesn't excuse him from any of my damages. It makes him all the more liable. And he has a higher standard by which he has to abide. And he had prior information when I have plenty of witnesses to that effect. The city really ought to not use police officers for politicking, and that's what Mayor Rockett's reign was, using police officers for politicking. And so now the city's facing all these suits and all these countersuits, and mine is, coming up. They really ought to settle very soon.
Are there any others?
They're smart, but, you know, they haven't been proven to be too smart so far, but I think maybe the smartness is starting to come. I even Cynthia Matthews has started, like, really regretting the Mike Rodkin reign of terror.
Why do you say that?
I see a tone of wanting to, like, and do more mediation and more, you know, she's trying, although I don't consider her any hero for the homeless and the downtrodden. I think she represents the upper classes in this town. She does have a sense of not wanting Santa Cruz to be known as the meanest little town in the city in America, and it's getting their reputation.
That's Mayor Cynthia Matthews you're talking about.
Yeah, I think she wants it to look nice, and she's very upset because Rotkin did not allow it to look nice. He went over the line.
Now, do you know if any other police abuse cases came up during Rotkin's term?
I know. So, well, it seems like it was just a license. He must have gave them license to. You know, it was an encouragement to. And it's still going on. There's, you know, I know people, medical marijuana people that have been abused and.
So, David, we have you on the line here at last. You've had a number of experiences with. Well, you've had rather regular experiences with the effects of welfare cutbacks on poor people in Fresno, and you have sort of a network of sources here that puts you in touch with those problems. Would you like to comment on how this county's cuts is affecting poor people, as far as you know, and what this bodes for people in the future in terms of both homelessness and civil rights for the homeless on the streets?
Well, this city, more than any other city, more than San Francisco, more than any city in the United States, has the greatest disparity between the rich and the poor. The poor who are working poor and are barely holding on to things are being impacted, right now very seriously. So the number of homeless is going to increase quite dramatically here in Santa Cruz. And there will be our own homeless. They won't be the gypsy-type, hippie, migratory homeless that everybody likes to categorize everything as. There are several different types of homeless. These are people that, you know, have been working poor. They now have having their stamps taken away from them, their benefits taken away from them. There were, like, about 24 counties in the state of California that rebelled against this, and Santa Cruz County didn't choose to rebel. Instead, Santa Cruz County chose to cut and cut fast. I would say Alameda County's plan to give GA only 3 months out of the year is going to probably have a very serious impact on us because, hey, you know, if you're going to be somewhere, you might as well, you know, where you're dying or starving, you might as well be somewhere where it's beautiful and there are some good qualities, you know, of this social fabric here. There are some decent people like yourself that help people, but we, you know, there's no way we're not going to be overwhelmed. The whole country is going to be overwhelmed. But there's no way that Santa Cruz is not going to be overwhelmed. I think it's a shame that the current city administration is not working with the county. And it's a shame that the current city administration doesn't see that the homeless activists and the homeless that have been here for a while are their buffer zone for probably a really big wave of homelessness and poverty, and that these people, instead of fighting with them, are really could be their strongest allies in making things work. That's a very, very sad and unfortunate that they can't see that. Instead, you know, you have a further polarization Pacific Avenue. You know, there's the rich end and there's the poor end. You know, it's like it's just gotten worse and worse. They're giving license to, you know, the Downtown Association to create apartments on the new building they're building, you know, across from the Cineplex, the multi-Cineplex. And they're giving the rent level $36 above what the fair market value for the Housing Authority allows, which means that there'll be no Section 8. The supposed Santa Cruz principle of, you know, equally distributing its poor among, you know, the new housing is not in effect right now. They're basically just selling the town. They're selling a lot of it to the Seaside Company. And the Seaside Company and its security forces, you know, security guards, are actually going into beach flats all the way over to 2nd Avenue, clear away from the Seaside Company, kicking down doors and putting people under citizen's arrest for things like having kicked the door of the Surf Bowl. You know, that's how far this thing's gotten out of control.
You're talking about First Alarm security personnel?
Who is the Seaside Company's security? I thought they had their own.
I think they hire First Alarm security.
Yeah, well, the Seaside security forces are actually going into beach flat neighborhood houses and kicking the doors down. And the city of Santa Cruz police are even embarrassed by this behavior. They're not going along with it. They are not following through with the rest.
How many instances of this happening have you heard of?
I've heard of a couple. Yeah, and who knows how... It's the kind of thing that needs to be stopped immediately at the bud. And, you know, maybe $250,000 out of the Seaside Company might stop them. But I feel that what I'm trying to say is that they've been encouraged by the city council's behavior.
What specific actions has the city council taken that you feel represent that kind of encouragement?
The fact that they're willing to give away people's homes for a parking lot for a convention center and have the city pay for it.
How far has that process gone?
It's gone quite a ways. You know, you'll hear the progressive liberal bent people on the city council say, well, it's a 10-year, 13, 15-year plan. No, don't bet on it. They're gonna get away with doing as much as they can, as fast as they can, and it's the same thing with the River Street Gateway project. You know, back September 10th, that very same night that I was a victim of police abuse, they had moved the agenda. So things after 11 o'clock at night, $750,000 were spent on infrastructure that the out of town corporations are coming here benefiting from us. You know, should have been willing to. Pay. Instead, we're doing corporate welfare on a mass scale now out of city council, and that's what city council's business is mostly about, and it's in consent agenda and after 10:30 at night, which means it's away from the public. Plus, for the first time, this last city council agenda, for the first time, they are taking matters that are usually only in litigation or personnel matters and putting it into the closed session, the secret meeting part of the city council, and taking land use and lease and rental of city land into that part of the city council meeting. I'm sure that's against the law. They may have some kind of excuse or reasons to say that, you know, well, since we're only taking from one bidder, we want the bidding numbers not to be private. Well, they may want that, but that's not the law. So this last city council meeting, I was not there, but I went to the 5 minutes of public open meeting where they got to vote on making that kind of stuff secret in the litigation section, and it's wrong. And there's something people really ought to be alerted. Ought to be alerted that this is going on.
At that second and fourth Tuesday, of course, at the 3:30 and at 7, there are city council meetings, and the closed litigation session, I think, starts what?
1:30.
1:30.
Yeah.
Now, what was the vote on that last Tuesday city council meeting to make those matters secret that you feel should have been made open? Did they vote unanimously?
I don't know if they vote unanimously, because I know that I think Catherine and Celia were late. You know,
Catherine Byers and Celia Scott.
Yeah, which probably would have been the two votes against doing that, unless, you know, Catherine was in on some kind of rationale. You know, Catherine will go along with rationale for a while, you know, and then she'll finally say, okay, enough of this. We're starting to look, you know, she'll stop it after a while. But she'll go along with rationale. And if they had some kind of rationale that, you know, whoever they were making these deals with, and to me it's a way of setting up sweetheart deals, and it's against the law.
What can citizens do? I understand you've been actually...
I'm reporting things to the union. I'm reporting things to as many people as I can to let them know that this stuff is going on.
Well, what about ordinary people? Do you suggest...
Attend the meetings. You know, there's a fellow... my mind is so bad anymore. The fellow who talks about low-rent housing calling.
Oh, you're talking about Ed Davidson.
Yeah, Ed Davidson. Uh-huh. Now, he, you know, may not agree with radicals, and he may not agree with a lot of stuff that maybe you and I might agree on in terms of who the city should serve and so forth, but he does the work of actually reminding the city council that they're not doing their job when it comes to low-income rental housing in this town. He constantly does that, and we need to let, you know, it be known that there are people out there that are doing that, but he doesn't have really an outlet. You yourself create an outlet for yourself, and some people do hear you. Ed Davidson doesn't have an outlet, and he also, you know, has a more of a narrow agenda, perhaps. And he's willing to let the environment go in the name of low-rent housing. He's letting to, you know, let development come in the name of low-rent housing. He doesn't have the green way of looking at things with alternative energy, and, you know, why are we building more parking lots when everyone knows the internal combustion engine must go, so therefore we should be stopping the parking lots and increasing the bike lanes and forcing the issue and giving credits to car lots that open with solar energy, a certain percentage of solar energy or electronic cars or electric cars. We should give them incentives. We're not doing that. Instead, we're giving incentives to have more internal combustion engines and to have a city that's more and more San Jose built. Now, it's strange, this last agenda. They said that they were going to this one company for the De La Viega golf course drainage that was in Pebble Beach, and I checked it out. Their office isn't in Pebble Beach. The agenda actually just had misinformation. Cynthia Matthews says it wasn't important, but I think to give the illusion that we're shopping Monterey Bay is wrong, especially when we're shopping San Jose, and we're bringing San Jose over here, and you know, sometimes it's union, a lot of times it isn't.
Getting back to this question of how can folks get information directly from someone like yourself who's more knowledgeable on these issues.
Call me up.
What's your phone number? For broadcast purposes, what phone number would you like to give out?
Yeah, I don't know. I need to talk to my significant other.
All right, well, if you have questions of David Silvey,
call the Green Office,
459-0199. 459-0199. That's 459. Rush to your pencils and papers, folks. 0199 to get an update from David here on what's going on. We're hoping...
We're having a general membership green meeting April 22nd at Loudoun Nelson Center, too, which we're going to really go over all this stuff.
Now, you have been doing some writing yourself, I believe, in connection with the distinguished Robert Norse of Huff Publications.
Yes, yes.
You have been putting out an occasional broadside...
Occasional, and I've been going through a lot of housing, besides the medical crisis and all the crisis that I'm sure we all are, but I've been going through a housing thing right now that I really have had to stay on top of, and I promise you to be getting more information down on paper a little more.
Folks, you heard it here first. Finally, there's a lot, of course, we need to talk about, but we have a limited amount of time.
Sure.
You've spoken of the importance of understanding what's happening with low-rent housing in the area where you live, which is what, the River Flats area? It's
Lower Ocean River Flats. Well, what's happening is this. People are being evicted. They're painting the wood frames, maybe fumigating, and charging $200 more. This at the same time that the people that are barely making it, and only because they're getting their food stamps are they able to make the rent, are having that taken away from them, so it has to come out of the rent. At the same time when people are least able to take any kind of, you know, shuffle, there's this, and it's not a classical gentrification. I've seen these places. They're not gentrified. They're slumlord raised rent. You know, and there should be a monitoring of evictions and raised rentals. You know, and there should be a constant, people should not be allowed to evict without filing through the city, and the rental raises should be controlled. You know, monitored. Why are you raising the rent? You know, if it's just to clear out poor people, you know, so they can get more, whatever, university uppies or whatever, I don't know. It's just, not, they're not meeting city guidelines, and they're in the city, and they're getting away with it.
Well, what are the city guidelines, you know?
Not completely. I know there are, in the city, much more guidelines than in the county. In the county, you can be evicted and you're out. You know, the sheriff will just get you out.
Now, city,
there are more steps to go through. Also, in the city, the new buildings, you know, there are percentages that have to be low income. There's low cost housing. There's low income, and you know the difference. Low income usually refers to rental. Low cost housing usually refers to first time buyers and helping people actually own a home. But there is guidelines in the city for low income percentages, and if they get any kind of variance at all from the city to build an extra this or an extra that, any kind of variance, and these people all have, everybody gets variances, it seems, in the city, then they are to comply with that 15%, and they're not.
And if someone wants to educate herself or himself about this in terms of low-income stuff, I guess we're actually hoping to have an interview with Lighthouse Linda LeMaster.
Oh, yeah, great.
Santa Cruz Housing Now advocate and has been for some time, as well as a former worker with the Welfare Parents Support Group and Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for that.
Gives you more of an inside view. I'm giving you more of a little bit of an outside view. I'm giving you a perspective saying that, hey, this is supposed to be a progressive town. Guess what? Many, many cities all over the country are doing a lot better job. In fact, we're doing just about the worst.
Well, you've covered a lot of issues. You've covered police abuse by the Seaside Corporation. You've covered police abuse by the Santa Cruz Police Department. You've covered your own personal case. You've talked about how the low-income housing situation is being ignored, and you've talked about how the city council seems to be, as you say, selling away the town. Maybe in future conversations we can get into some more of the meat and potatoes of both what's gone on in the recent past and what is scheduled on the upcoming agendas. So those of us who want to see this process halted or turned in another direction can do something about it.
It's going to take a lot of people being a lot educated and educating each other. So I'm glad your show's here, and bless you. Blessed be.
Thank you, David Silva, civil rights worker, and, well, what would you call yourself?
Huh? What do I call myself?
not what do they call you. What would you call yourself?
What do I call myself? I don't know. I just always I believe in democracy. Very
pain in the ass of the ruling class.
I'm a pain in the ass to bureaucratic arrogance, you know. And also, I blow the whistle a lot, and I've gotten myself in perhaps some trouble from blowing the whistle a lot. But you know, this is democracy. You know, we own the airwaves, we own the government. It's our government. We got to work. I know when you're surviving, it's really, really hard. But things are only going to get worse if we don't start really getting in there and saying no, stop this shit.
Thank you, David Silva.
Rosebud died to set you free, although you did not want to be. Though she made it hard to see, Rosebud died for you. Rosebud died to make you care about poor people everywhere with their desperate, hungry stares. Rosebud died for you. Rosebud died to make you stop, died to wake you with a shock, died to stop this bullshit talk. Rosebud died for you. Rosebud died to make you see that people suffer needlessly. This ain't how it's supposed to be. Rosebud died for you. Rosebud died for you. Without thinking through something that she had to do. Rosebud died for you. Rosebud died to let you know that some things you just can't let go. Let a thousand new parks grow. Rosebud died for you. Rosebud died for you. Rosebud died for you.
And that was Carol Denny from her album North County Jail, the song Rosebud. Rosebud, of course, was the young activist in Berkeley who was executed by police when she was found in the mansion of Chancellor Tin of the University of California at Berkeley in the controversies and troubles surrounding the People's Park, the volleyball court, the university's expansion into and destruction of public spaces that poor people were using, the attempt to remove the homeless from sight, out of sight and out of mind in Berkeley back in 1991-92. Still going on, though recently Berkeley, of course, has been striking back, and the university actually removed the million-dollar volleyball court, the Redwood Sand volleyball court they put in 1991 over the mass protests of the community in an attempt to gentrify People's Park, the park that people of Berkeley had themselves claimed in 1969, 30 years ago. Rosebud. Harold Denny. If you're interested in getting a copy of that album, you can contact Frank at Vista Recordings, and the phone number is 510-530-1205. Again, 510-530-1205. And if you miss any of the numbers, just give me a call at the much more easily rememberable number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll give you those numbers.
A poem is a street hustler. A poem is a street hustler living on its looks, smart enough to play dumb, tough enough to look easy, and not hiding its meanings any more than it has to keep from getting busted for indecent exposure. Despised and irresistible in carefully torn jeans, a poem leans against the doorway, not quite looking at you and saying nothing just yet. Only the tip of its tongue curls as if forgotten in the side of its mouth. It's young. It's got a fake ID, and it ran away from home, and it doesn't care what happens as long as everything does. Culture makes people yawn. Beauty drives them crazy. As long as a poem is beautiful, it doesn't need anything else and knows it. It laughs dismissingly at everything that isn't perfect. It's a little unkind. Culture comes later when the game gets it and it needs a pimp and a publisher and drugs and distribution and reassurance and reviews, and it isn't so young anymore. Then the English teachers get it, and it isn't even a poem anymore, just homework and a social disease. A poem is a street hustler leaning against a doorway, not quite looking at you, and you can't look away.
Hi, my name is Becky Johnson. I'm on the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and I'm also on the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program Subcommittee. On March 11, 1997, here at the City Council, Council Member Scott Kennedy made two extremely important misstatements in the brewing debate over emergency shelter versus ticketing for the act of sleeping. He said, and I quote, "But we do know this, that every person, with the exception of maybe two or three nights in the last two or three years, every person who sought emergency shelter in the city of Santa Cruz was provided shelter." In June of 1996, I consulted then head of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, Ron Howard. I asked him how many persons who sought shelter in our program were not able to be accommodated. He told me, quote, "For every person we place, we turn away another person." Let me remind Council, from mid-March to mid-November, the ISSP shelters only a maximum of 60 people on a given night, and as few as 15 on many nights. With a homeless population estimated to be between 500 and 1,500, on no night in recent memory has the City of Santa Cruz provided sufficient emergency shelter space for the number of homeless within its city limits. From mid-March to mid-November, the homeless in Santa Cruz rarely even bother to ask if there's room in the ISSP. They know the answer, and they need to spend their time looking for a clean, dry, well-hidden place in which to spend the night. Councilmember Kennedy also said, quote, "We received information from the Santa Cruz Police Department. If you take the number of people cited for the so-called camping ban," I don't know why I called it a so-called camping ban, it says camping ban law on it, In the city of Santa Cruz for the last 18 months, there have been an average of 5 people a month cited for the camping ban. Now, I cannot question the truthfulness of the Santa Cruz City Police report. Kennedy did not exclude tickets issued at the City Hall sweepers protest, which took place outside these chambers. I'm assuming this was simply an oversight on his part. Still, it didn't have the ring of truth for me. So I went out on Pacific Avenue that last Tuesday night. I spoke with a man who was dressed in rags. He was using a walker, and he had a sign which said, "Out of luck, please help." He told me he'd been homeless for 18 months here in Santa Cruz and had only been ticketed for sleeping once. I said, "Well, what happened when you were ticketed? What happened?" He said, "I went to court and I was convicted and I was sentenced to 52 hours of community service for one act of sleeping. 52 hours of community service."
I believe your time is up.
3 minutes flies by.
It does. Thank you. Thank you for honoring the time.
Coming up next Monday is the first homeless injunction trial in the history of Santa Cruz. Mayor Rotkin, I say mayor because he still seems to hold the power without the title, along with Kennedy, Matthews, and Campbell, went to court last year to get an injunction against peaceful protesters outside. The council wouldn't address the basic issue, what can a homeless person in Santa Cruz do to maintain dignity, safety, and sanity in finding a place to sleep at night? Then as now, there were less than 60 legal places to sleep for over 750 people. Anyone falling asleep in a car, covering up with a blanket outside after 11, faced a city law and $162 fine. Instead of an amnesty, a moratorium, setting aside a parking lot at night, maybe reopening the Coral Street open-air shelter, a safe haven, or establishing emergency zones in the city where sleep would not be a crime, this council cooked up a court order, an injunction that raised the penalty for falling asleep up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine per snooze. This council cooked up a court order, an injunction that raised the penalty for falling asleep up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine per snooze if you did it as part of the City Hall protest. Why get an injunction? Because you can do that in secret, in closed session, without a public debate or a public vote. You don't have to hear public testimony, and we've seen how Mr. Rotkin hates to hear public testimony. Last December, he wouldn't let his own council members talk on the sleeping down issue. In January, he led the vote to kill a change of the council rules that might have made that possible. Last June, Rotkin's police arrested Sandria Roth. Loringer's another case under that injunction. On Monday, March 31st at 9 a.m., she goes to jury trial in courtroom 2, again on your money, because her protest is embarrassing to politicians, politicians who should be embarrassed. Roth just went for a week of trial, along with 5 others, for chaining herself to the podium right over there. A jury refused to convict her and her 5 companions. 2 jurors told me afterward they found Mayor Rotkin, who testified on this trial, autocratic and disingenuous in his arrest of protesters policy. The March 4th homelessness study session concluded with many on the council committing themselves to investigate amnesty for tickets, check into the so-called warnings, cops give criminal sleepers, consider the limitations of the Winter Armory program that's reopened, and seriously act on a campground or safe haven proposal. Drop these ridiculous sleep crime cases, set up a real task force at least 50% homeless to investigate homeless issues, turn to the real problems, and we will turn with you. In the meantime, let poor people of this community sleep without being molested. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council under oral communications? And we'll close this portion of session and move on.
I just have a question, because it was raised. It was a while ago we had that, special meeting rather than study session, and I think we made a motion that you and Scott...
That's right, and we haven't gotten together on that, so just we will.
I'm just going to ask the status of that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask the same question. Could we have some idea when we'll have something back?
When I can confer with my colleague, I'll let you know. No, it just, Next on our agenda.
Next on the agenda of the City Council, and that's Mayor Cynthia Matthews speaking at the March 25th, 1997 Council meeting, is obviously not any homeless issues, any issues that her council supposedly meant to consider and receive testimony to deal with about a month before at the March 4th homelessness special session of City Council. As we've just heard from her nervous laugh, she hasn't even gotten back to that agenda with Councilmember Scott Kennedy, who organized that session. So for those of you who are wondering whether this dropped into a black hole or down one of the non-existent public toilets that isn't open at night for people who need to have such places, give a call to City Council at 429-3550, that's 429-3550, and ask to speak to Mayor Cynthia Matthews or Councilmember Scott Kennedy. Find out why Cynthia, Queen of Mean, and Scott have not gotten their act together on this, because people outside are still getting tickets, still getting hassled, and the shelter space has dropped substantially since the Winter Armory was closed in mid-March. Which is by me and by Becky Johnson of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Mayor Matthews cut off Johnson before she was able to finish her speech. She was examining misstatements made by Scott Kennedy 2 weeks before, who seemed to have learned very little from the City Council session that he himself got together and organized. Regarding Sandria Roth's misdemeanor injunction sleep crime trial, which was due to start tomorrow on March 31st, it has actually been postponed. I believe it's at least a month. It certainly won't be happening tomorrow. And in addition to that, Sandria's other jury trial, she was a protester outside City Hall in last spring during the 7.5-month-long City Hall sleepers protest. Those trials, including Dan Hopkins' trial, which began in February and has been postponed, are again postponed. And this actually is a positive thing for a lot of the demonstrators, though I usually advise people to go speedily to court so as to put maximum pressure on the courts. In the case of these kinds of jury trials, where the district attorney seems determined to drag homeless activists over the coals, regardless of the cost to the taxpayers and the stupidity of doing so, and the elementary justice that is being denied, even night after night, as his trials continue, because we need this time, it's a good thing that these trials are delayed, because now there's an opportunity for mounting jury nullification education, letting citizens know that they have a right, if they're chosen for a jury, and indeed many of you will be called at one time or another during your lives to serve on a jury, that you can exercise your right to say not guilty if you disagree with the law, if you feel the prosecution is fundamentally unfair, regardless of the technical instructions given you by the judge. This means that you have the right to make an independent choice, and I talked about this at some length in my last show. Indeed, some people like that jury nullification information. I'm hoping to put out a longer show, and perhaps sometime this week I'll do a longer show on jury nullification. We haven't yet heard from FIJA, Fully Informed Jury Amendment Association, which is supposed to be sending us literature to let the folks of the community know not just what their rights are, but what other famous and educated individuals have said throughout history, throughout American constitutional history, about the rights that judges now cover up, suppress, and refuse to allow attorneys to exercise or discuss in court. So we'll be hearing more about those cases as they develop, but for the moment, thankfully, those cases are on hold, though, frankly, as protests begin to mount in the months ahead, I suspect those cases will return with a vengeance. And now an update from a voice we haven't heard for quite a while on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Lighthouse Linda LeMaster interviewed her yesterday, and she, as usual, is eloquent, far-ranging, and incisive in her comments, covering a lot of ground. Linda is a housing activist, a civil rights activist, a mother, and a knowledgeable member of the community, as well as having various official positions with the city. So we're here with activist Linda LeMaster, also known as Lighthouse Linda, who's a member of Santa Cruz Housing Now and numerous other groups, Bag Ladies Revolt. What other groups are you a part of, Linda?
I'm a member of Oakland-based Women's Economic Agenda Project, and by some miracle, I'm on the Elnon Advisory Board for the City of Santa Cruz, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women.
The chair, in fact.
At the moment, this year, I get to be chair.
Are you being treated like a piece of furniture?
You mean in general in my life, or as a chair?
I withdraw the question. Now, you're just reading a flyer written by Becky Johnson called "Cut the Crap, Councilmember Kennedy," and you had a rather positive reaction to that. What's that flyer about, and why should a member of the listening audience have any concern about it?
Well, I don't know who your listeners are at the moment, Robespierre, but as I read
That's
this...
Bath Robespierre to you, Linda.
Well, pardon the bath. As I read this, you know, this is a continuation. It started out between Scott Kennedy of the Santa Cruz City Council and yourself, and it looks to me like Becky was trying to come in behind Kennedy's taking advantage of the oral communications.
Maybe you can tell people what this is really about.
You cut me off.
I did.
Oh.
I guess people don't really know what you're talking about. Maybe you can clarify, just summarize what the issue is here that is involved in this flyer and why it's important for us to know about it.
I think we have to do this interview at another time.
Uh-oh. Well, it was a brief interview, but a merry one.
When you cut me off, the thing you asked me to say is what I was trying to say, and now I can't remember it.
Oh, really?
I didn't sleep last night.
Well, you were saying you liked Becky's flyer initially.
No, I liked Becky's response at City Hall to the false statements that Councilmember Scott Kennedy made, because nobody else has bothered to answer me. He's going around saying this made-up stuff like there's only 5 people a month getting camping tickets. I know individuals that get more than 5 tickets a month. You know, I know young people like Eddie Hicks Jr. that had to go to jail because they don't have a job and they're getting camping tickets. So, I mean, we know this is false. But he gets to run around saying this and nobody corrects it. So what I was trying to say to you is I appreciate that Becky is responding directly to the kinds of misunderstandings or misstatements that Kennedy's promulgating.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were actually a member of the panel, as was Becky Johnson, on the March 4th, I guess it was the City Council special session that they also called
special
it.
Special meeting.
They also called it a study session and so forth.
The Brown Act requires them to call it a special city council meeting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Why? What's the significance of that?
It's just one of its names.
I see. And at that March 4th session, what happened and what's happened since, if you were going to sum it up?
Well, I don't have a very good summary, but I'll give you 2 opinions. The thing was called with as little public outreach as possible, although they put it in an auditorium. The city made a conscious effort not to let too many people know that this was happening. For example, they also didn't include community television, which a regular city council meeting is televised. And you couldn't find out what was going to happen until the weekend before the event if you're an ordinary person with some interest in city government. If you're homeless, I don't know how you would find out. So I see that as one of the limitations of it. It was a stilted dialogue because it wasn't really, in a true sense, open to the public. And then I thought the parody of posturing at the end of the day on the part of the city council I thought it was a backhand, you know. A lot of good information was put on the table, a lot of good legal resources, great ideas, and city council members basically just spent 5 or 6 minutes apiece posturing, and Rotkin in particular trying to discount and discredit things that had been said rather than any of them making a commitment for significant changes that they heard and know could be made.
You include Celia Scott and Catherine Byers in this posture?
I'm saying as a whole, council members wasted their time posturing instead of having either a dialogue with each other or with the people that they had invited in as relative experts, or with the little bit of public that include homeless people who were there, let alone making a commitment to fill some of the gaps of unmet needs or create the models we need to start at least honestly dealing with the growing homelessness in our county.
Now, the major issues that I saw it at that council meeting were, the aborted dialogue around the law which criminalizes sleep and the near absence of any legal places to sleep, particularly with the closing of the Winter Armory shelter, the specific problems attendant on the Winter Armory shelter itself, assuming that it reopens next year, which it, right now it's not slated to anyway, problems of criminalizing homelessness generally around town, and then I guess the whole process was supposedly operating around this continuum of care document, which is sort of, for my money, a padded document prepared by the county to get money from the grants from the federal government for particular bureaucratic programs, which don't usually attend to many homeless needs. Is that a fair characterization, or am I just a bureaucrat baiting again here?
It could be both, Robert, but I would say that I agree with you that putting a lot of emphasis on this document written by the county for fundraising purposes, a document that the makers were admittedly exaggerating, they themselves admit it's not exact, that was one of the limitations of the dialogue. But I don't think that limitation made the whole thing a waste of time. I didn't think it was a waste of time until it sounded at the end like the city's not going to do anything unless someone brings them St. Paul's head on a silver platter or something.
Now, what in fact has happened since March 4th? We're now March 29th, and have you seen any fruit from this glorious tree?
Well, Robert, as you know, I got a letter signed by the mayor and Scott Kennedy, who had helped organize that event, thanking us for being civil.
Let's see. Which I think actually may have more to do with what they're really trying to do than one might at first blink think, namely that they're concerned with quieting protest and giving some and healing the divisions that have cropped up on the city council itself, because Councilmember Rotkin and his majority, Hernandez, Campbell, and Matthews, are now able to quell any debate on the sleeping ban before it even begins, and to keep the current procedures in place that have prevented that debate. So in order to show that they're not really actively engaging in a harsh majoritarian slamming of democracy, they are holding this, they held this this special session. And now, of course, nothing is happening out of it.
I guess I can't disagree with what you just said. I felt that this meeting was put together expressly to heal the one wound or breach of the city council minority that you're talking about, not getting to discuss or be heard when they made some minor proposals for change of the camping ban. They got shot down before the balloon even left Earth. Mm-hmm. And so I think this meeting indeed was in response to that bad moment, shall we say, in parliamentarianism at City Hall the month before. But that doesn't mean that a lot of things can't come out of it. And I really do feel like the city council members, in their defensiveness, in their blindness, because of their hang-up about trying to use oral communication to not hear or whatever that history is about, they're not going to come up with fertile and good ideas or cost-effective ideas that will fill in the unmet needs. If it's going to happen, we're going to do it. Homeless people themselves are going to do it. Church people themselves are going to do it. You know, and they shouldn't have to be like Father Marini sticking their neck out and risking their job to fly something new.
Father Marini was the, of course, pastor of Holy Cross Church, who opened up the pavilion last summer, and which was then, according to reporter Becky Johnson, closed down through the intervention of Mayor Mike Rotkin. That was challenged, I think, by Mayor Rotkin, who's now a council member. He claimed that it happened for a number of reasons, but that there were lots of complaints. There was some back-and-forth dialogue on that.
I don't know how much of it was the city exercising control, but I heard Father Marini talking at one of the early Eco Village meetings about how his own parishioners had told him, stop helping the homeless people up there, they don't want to see them, or not in my backyard, to put it in common terms.
Mm-hmm. So at the last council meeting, I think there were some small minor noises from Catherine Byers and Celia Scott about what's happening, Mayor Matthews and Scott Kennedy, with the aftermath of this homelessness study session, or session in which you spent 6 hours. They didn't say that. They just asked what was happening. And, of course, Matthews' response was, oh, gosh, I don't know. is anything happening, in your opinion, Linda?
Well, as I said, thank you notes went out, and I meant that as my whole answer. Mm-hmm. But again, I would like to say, somebody's got to start throwing out concrete ideas with a little energy behind them, and I don't think we should wait for the city to shape or structure how that's going to be done. There's too many unmet needs. And until I see a variety of kinds of shelter, including campsites, including halfway houses, including autonomous, unsubsidized co-ops in every neighborhood, I think it's obvious there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And educating this city council has just begun.
Do you think people should give you a call with their suggestions and talk to Santa Cruz Housing Now?
Well, sometimes I do. The problem is catching me at home, but people are welcome to try. My number is 423-HOME, and that's a O, not a zero. You'll get someone else. Or 423-4663. I also have a voicemail line which people are welcome to use to document things going on that they don't want to forget the details of, like if you've stumbled into a cop watch situation and you don't have the tools to document that yourself, call this number for Housing Now in Santa Cruz, and I'll keep careful tabs of the time and date and incident description that people leave off. Or if you're in a situation where you need a mediator or a negotiator dealing with providers of services, homeless or not, if you want to use this voicemail line for that kind of support, we can do that to some extent, mostly in the city of Santa Cruz, unfortunately, and mostly in English. But that number is 457-9754 in box 182.
Now one more time.
457-9754, box 182, or extension 182 for Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
Anything coming up in the public arena that people should be alert for, Linda, in terms of meetings or deadlines or, I don't know, anything at all?
Well, there's one more gathering of people who are, this is a series of events run by the county to have input from the larger community to plan what they're calling welfare reform, or the dismantling of the welfare system is the way I would put it, of family welfare, that is. And that's April 12th, the day before my birthday.
Catch that one, folks.
The results of this four Saturday mornings meeting will be going to the Board of Supervisors. So if you have a concern about whether there's going to be GA or what happens to the families that are getting aid now, or families that should be getting food stamps and don't even know they're eligible, you need to be getting in touch with the Board of Supervisors or some of the county commissions before the HRA, the county's welfare department, sends this report to the Board of Supervisors. Also, at the end of April, as you know, Robert, there's a statewide conference called Housing California. So I think we need to tribe up locally and make the most of this and try to use that conference as an opportunity to build a better or stronger and more diverse statewide network of housing and homeless advocates.
Yeah, I also would like to point out that for those who are interested in, we don't have any money, and want to, I suppose that's everybody, but those who want to sell the Street Spirit, an Oakland homeless newspaper that I and others like Becky Johnson, Laura Tucker, David Dumar write for, well, you can both write for this magazine, or I should say a newspaper, it's a monthly newspaper, 12 to 16 pages, or you can sell it, and if you want to sell it, we'll give you some free copies, and you can just go out there and sell them for a buck a piece, the idea being to get the word out, and at the same time get yourself a little folding money, or coffee change, as the case may be. My phone number, if you're interested in selling this paper, is 423-4833, or 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, home. The Street Spirit newspaper can be picked up outside the Cinema 9 on downtown Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz. And here's an interview with one of the vendors. It seems that, according to him, police are cracking down. On the corner here near the Cinema 9, talking to Jim, you're a vendor of Street Spirit.
Yeah, I was out here last night distributing the newspaper. And a friend of mine was panhandling with a sign. It was after dark. The police came up, ID'd him, and hooked him up and took him to jail, I think on a probation violation. But I've talked to a couple people starting last night. They've been up till last night, it was like no panhandling after dark verbally. But as long as you were passive with a sign, there was no problem. But starting last night, they've been coming down pretty heavy. Very heavy on people.
Just on him or on others as well?
Everybody I've talked to. I talked to a guy tonight. He's just as soon as it got dark, they were here and they ran everybody off. People that were passively panhandling, not sitting down, standing up, away from the building, just standing there holding a sign. not saying anything to anyone.
Well, we need to get the panhandling rules out because it's legal to have a sign after dark and sit quietly with a sign.
These guys ask if you'd like to go to jail if you question them.
Right. Well, I'll get a sign and join you.
I'll
say fine.
Fine paper there, Jim.
Thank you. I like
it. Very fine paper.
It's been wonderful to me.
I think you have an older issue there.
This is the one I kind of... Because, see, I'm not selling.
Of course not.
I'm handing them out.
Ah, yes.
You
can sell the homeless newspaper. That's a First Amendment right.
But the police are not hip to the First
Amendment.
They
aren't. So
or the Fourth Amendment.
Have they been specifically telling you can't sell street spirit?
No, but yesterday a mall... I just try to...
avoid trouble.
Yeah. No, avoid confrontation.
Right.
I have never had a cop say, "Oh, you're right. I'm sorry," and back off. Never, never happened. Whatever they say, I'm Mr. Cooperative. Even if they're stomping my rights into the ground, you know, there's other ways to deal with it, like what I'm doing right now.
Right. Well, keep me advised. You know my number.
Yep.
423-HUFF. Call me if there's more details on text on panhandling.
Well, I was standing here like this, and they walked right past me. Made a comment.
Which was?
I'd never seen that before.
Oh, the police?
Yeah, they looked at the paper and said, I've never seen
that. There's a new shift down in the mall.
Get used to it.
Well, I'd like to see, you know, I mean, all we have in this town is a Sentinel, and I'd like to see some news.
I know
these people, and it's, you know.
Yeah, you actually sell their kind of trash. I'm shocked. So he's pointing to a story by Becky Johnson, who happens to be present here.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add, Jim, before I end
this? No, other than, once again, I sure appreciate everything you do for us.
Hey, I appreciate what you do for us.
Yeah.
And Jim, the Street Spirit newspaper enables you now to be able to be out here at night, in essence, exchanging a newspaper for some funds.
Right.
Otherwise, your usual approach, having a sign and a can, would go down the...
Like, I would have no money tonight. I would be absolutely without dinner. I came out here at 6:30. It was dark. I had less than a dollar in my pocket. And intending to panhandle, but with this recent development, I would have not had no way to get coffee in the morning, what I call coffee and, which is a coffee and a muffin or a croissant or whatever, coffee and, or something to eat tonight to take back to my squat.
Right.
So, thanks
good.
Again.
Keep up the good work.
Now I sympathize with the homeless when I see him on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health. And we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside, safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health. And we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way. But she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed.
Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home, everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. You.
And that was Mark Levy from his 1980s album Take Off Your Clothes, the selection The Homeless Shuffle. And now a rare bit of footage from something I recorded 2 days ago, when we have Officer Eveleth, usually the terror of homeless people on the avenue, exercising his terrorism against a terrorist, a man who had been reportedly harassing homeless and young people at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific. I followed Officer Eveleth around the corner as he pulled this man over and spoke with him, held him, in essence, captive, giving him a berating lecture for about 10 or 15 minutes. Well, we're just going to get a brief bit of this, and I want to note that no charges were filed against the guy, though one of the homeless people told me he had, in fact, been robbed by this man and threatened. And the word extortion was used by Officer Eveleth. Anyway, let's hear a snatch of this, and commend Officer Eveleth for at least addressing the problem in a certain way, although, again, this business of curbside justice and hostile speeches to people and ordering them away from the scene, which is what he ultimately did with this man, seems rather impromptu, rather personal, and doesn't have the same impact as filing a charge, which Eveleth also knows how to do and has done frequently with homeless people for essentially innocent behavior, like sitting on planters, smoking a cigarette, sitting on the sidewalk in a reclining position, leaning against a bicycle rack, riding the wrong way on the street with a bicycle, walking a dog, you name it. Anyway, here's Officer Eveleth speaking to a troll buster. But first you hear me talking to the young people that were being verbally attacked by this man.
So what's he going to look at?
An asshole that
he was nuts.
What happened?
Came up, he's going to take a beer, and he's like, I own this road, this whole road. If I see you here tomorrow,
you're paying rent. That homeboy right there with the spiked hair.
So he was threatening people in essence?
Yeah, pretty much.
If he gets a beer, he's going to come to the street tomorrow and tax me because it's his street.
Delusions of grandeur, perhaps? All right, well, an incident here at Cathcart and Pacific, to say the least.
Don't come down here and harass anybody. I don't care what they look like.
Who's harassing anybody?
Gee, I don't know. They come up and they tell me or telling them that you own the sidewalk.
What's that?
That's a tape recorder. Your name is Nicholas Weiss. Is that what your name is? And you're down here telling these kids that you own the sidewalk and that they have to pay you to stay down here. Is that true? Oh, it's not true. Then why would they tell me something like that? And why are you down here calling them punks?
Okay, I think you're blowing shit way out of proportion.
Oh, okay. Well, when I drive by and I see you in somebody's face, I'm going to blow that way out of proportion.
You're making the situation worse than it already.
No. You see, the situation was very good because this might be Friendship Corner, but do you understand there's more assault with a deadly weapon down here than anywhere else? And you were cruising for a bruising because just the other night I had a plainclothes sergeant get clocked by a girl down here.
Maybe my girlfriend got clocked.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Did she come and talk to me?
My girlfriend, but whoa, your sergeant is a different story.
No,
but
did she come
my
to
girlfriend.
Me? Did she come to me?
How could she go to you when your own sergeant's getting clocked?
911. 911.
How can she go to you? How can you help?
Throw
when your own fucking sergeant's getting clocked.
Yeah, guess what happened to that person? They went to jail.
Well, whatever. The person in front
so
of
what,
my
you
want to
come down here and get clocked too? That's what's going to happen.
Come on, man. Run my name. I don't have time for all this shit.
Well, you're going to be making time today.
Let's make time then. You know what I mean? Your own sergeant's getting clocked and you tell me to call 911?
That's right.
When my old lady gets raped and pissed off? I don't
so
think that doesn't sound right.
Yourself,
I'm not
right?
taking no kind of vigilant handy shit.
That's what
I didn't
like
tell
to
him
me.
Nothing. It looked like that. Eyes can do the scene.
Okay, so all those people down there are lying and you're telling
whatever me. Whatever the case may be. Whatever the case may be. I'm not causing much trouble.
It looked like you're causing trouble to me.
Brother, do your job.
I'm going to.
Okay. That's
and
what
you're
going
to be lucky
you
if
do.
You don't get to go to jail right now. Terrorist threats. So you better improve
threat.
Your attitude immensely.
My attitude
give
has
your
nothing to do with my actions that I've already committed.
Oh, no, that's what's wrong. Because your attitude is exactly what those actions are all about. And you go through life with the attitude you were displaying down there. You're going to get exactly what you deserve. Which
okay.
is probably going to be your butt kicked
okay.
by the 30 kids that are hanging out down there.
Okay.
And guess
let's
who gets to
that.
Come take care of it? I have to come take care of your mess.
Okay. Let's do that.
Do what?
Just do your job, sir.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I ask. Just do your job so I can walk this street safe, my lady can walk the street safe. That's all.
You'll be walking home safe and keep your mouth shut and not down here antagonizing.
Fuck those punks. Selling dope, selling acid, selling all that.
You point
out
to one selling dope to me right now.
I ain't doing none of that. I'm not pointing. I'm not doing your job for you. You do your own job. Run
that's what you're down
name,
here doing.
Run my name. Make sure that I'm not a murderer or a rapist. And you worry about those fuckers beating up
exactly.
women.
Exactly. Me. Not you.
Yeah. Okay, well, obviously the job's not being done. If my
obviously
girlfriend's getting beat up and raped and fucking...
When was that?
Okay.
Did she make a police report?
Of course she did.
And when did this happen?
You should know if you were doing your job.
Oh, no, I'm doing my
no,
job.
No, we're not, doing
everything.
It right here. We're not doing it right
hey,
here right
turn
now.
That thing off for me so that...
No.
And in another first, at Officer Evelis' request, I turned off the tape recorder to make the man able to speak more candidly with Officer Evelith. Actually, the conversation didn't improve much. And the next day, I found Officer Evelith's companion, Officer Over, harassing people up at the Triangle Park at Morrissey, Water, and Soquel, where homeless people occasionally gather to sell flowers and hang out with a shopping cart or two. And got some interviews from those folks. Unfortunately, we don't have time for those interviews right now. We are going to conclude with an interview by San Jose Community Homeless Alliance activist Sandy Perry. In San Jose, there's been some significant homeless demonstrations with the closing of the Armory, and we're going to hear about that now.
Okay. Yes.
Community Homeless Alliance Sandy Perry, also involved in cases of police abuse, and you're also a writer for a national publication, People's Tribune. There's recently been some information in the papers, some stories about demonstrations by homeless people protesting the closing down of the Armory, police harassment of homeless people for sleeping, and failure of the city to provide low-income housing for homeless people. Can you kind of give us an update?
Well, what happened was last week, you may be aware that the National Guard Armory is closed statewide, actually. Mm-hmm. And this would be for the last time because Pete Wilson has decreed that armories may no longer be used to house the homeless, although they're otherwise empty in the evenings. And so they closed permanently. It was very confusing the way it developed because it was an on-again, off-again situation having to do with weather and so forth. Anyway, what happened was the Community Homeless Alliance made a plan, which was a week ago, Sunday evening, that Sunday morning was the last morning the armories were supposed to be open. They secured a church where they could put people up for a couple of nights, and they were going to plan some marches on City Hall and so forth to demonstrate the need for low-cost housing and also to demand that the city open up buildings or at the very minimum provide some kind of a safe zone where people could sleep outside without being arrested or given tickets or harassed. So this was the plan. Now, It's very complicated because this whole armory situation, what happens with these armories, they are, as of March 15th, they're closed, however, subject to what they call a weather trigger. And the weather trigger, it means that if it rains during that time, reopened for a period of time, an unspecified period of time. What happened was about 3 o'clock that afternoon, in fact, we had already gathered at First Christian Church, it began to rain. And within an hour, it was decreed that the armories were going to be open 3 more days. So we had a couple of days of protest planned, and what ended up was that they ended up being postponed. The armories closed again, supposedly permanently, on Tuesday morning. So that night, let's see.
This is a week ago Tuesday?
Yeah. I'm having a hard time keeping track of the dates. Now I'm a little mixed up. They closed the following Monday. So that was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday night. Okay, they were open Sunday, Monday, Tuesday night. That Wednesday, a week ago Wednesday, they closed again permanently, supposedly. And so that Wednesday night, about 200 people met in Fairmont Plaza, which is right in downtown San Jose in the middle of the redevelopment area. We had some sandwiches, and then we marched over to a church. Again, it's St. Paul's United Methodist Church in San Jose, which had agreed to put us up for one more night. We had about 125 people there that night. We met the next morning at First Christian Church and decided to march on City Hall. We marched on City Hall. We had about 80 people, which is a pretty good-sized march for San Jose. I went into the mayor's office. The mayor, when I guess apparently she found out we were coming, and sneaked out the back door.
Sounds like Mayor Willie Brown in San Francisco.
Oh, really? He did the same thing?
Exactly the same thing. A year ago when we had a large protest, probably smaller than yours, but certainly, you know, similar number of people.
Okay, yeah. Well, anyway, we sat down in the mayor's office temporarily. We confronted the mayor's aide, a couple of the mayor's aides, and had a heated discussion with them and decided to, and they promised they were going to find a church for us to stay in and find vouchers for women and children and take other measures to deal with the situation. We were skeptical, so we sat in for a while, but then we regrouped and decided that we would back off temporarily and await a response, and that we would regroup there at 4 in the afternoon on Thursday. Well, out of the 80 people, about 75 came back Thursday.
I'm sorry, go ahead. About 75 came back.
Okay, this was at 4 p.m. A week ago Thursday. We were prepared to, if necessary, re-enter the mayor's office and pick up the fight. But in the meantime, it turned out that they had gotten the armory reopened for another night. So we went to the armory, and we agreed at that time that we were going to regroup on Saturday.
This was a week ago.
Yeah, we could go Saturday to carry on the fight, if necessary, take it to the basketball. There was an NCAA basketball tournament at the San Jose Arena, which was kind of a big showcase for San Jose. As it turned out, though, the turnout on Saturday was lower than what was necessary to make a good showing, so we didn't march.
So you say the showing on that Saturday?
On Saturday wasn't large enough to actually carry out the march.
And so you kept together. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, we've kept together since then. We've had meetings, we have a breakfast tomorrow, stuff like that. We haven't got major protests planned right now, but we're strategizing. Right now, we're one of the problems of the whole process has been is that with the situation with the armory and the weather trigger and the on again, off again, it's been almost impossible to plan this protest in such a way to really maximize support. We haven't really been able to galvanize any outside support because we haven't been able to predict what we were doing from day to day.
Uh-huh. Well, I understand.
Base, you know.
Yeah. Scott Wagers and Nancy Nichols, who are two of your colleagues in this effort, were on the air on KKUP on Wednesday in Purusha Buddha's show.
Oh, they were? Okay.
Talking about the issue. I didn't hear most of the show, so I kind of hope that I haven't been able to get them to call me back, but hopefully maybe we can get a report from them at some point. You'll be seeing them tomorrow?
Or? No, I'll be. They meet Tuesdays, every Tuesday at 7 a.m. at First Christian Church.
And the number for people to call who are interested is?
Let me get that for you. I'll get it right.
345-3345, I think it is. Let me double check. I think I also have it here.
Yeah, this is a question you always ask me, and I always have to search my files here.
345-2353, everybody. Don't listen to that earlier number. 345-2353 is the number of the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance. So, Sandy, you're also involved in actions around police abuse in San Jose, particularly regarding the Soto Mesa slaying by a police officer. Have you been involved with that?
Yes, I have.
What's happening there? You have your police review auditor, do you not, over in San Jose? Does that make everything hunky-dory?
No, there's still a lot of problems. We've been fighting in San Jose for a civilian review board people have been doing it for about 27, 28 years now. I've been involved in it for the last 5 or 6 years. But right now, because of the auditor, it's something of a standoff. The city council just got the auditor enshrined into the city charter last November during an election, mostly because of people were not aware of the significance of the issue. We were opposed to the auditor because we felt that that was an obstacle to a civilian review. Now that it's stuck in the city charter, we may just fight for the civilian review board and forget about opposing the auditor. The auditor is really basically irrelevant.
Yeah, you may find some problems. We have a civilian review board that's a real joke here in Santa Cruz. And
well, we had a report here from John Malkin.
He was a member who resigned.
Yeah, he came to our... we had a forum in January. He came to the forum and gave us a report on some of the problems there, that actually the civilian review board was not representative of the community, according to him.
Right, and it's hamstrung by its desire to placate the police department, its failure to stand up for the basic rights of people in the community, and its isolation from the community. It's a sad situation, but... do you have the number of the human rights group that's concerned with citizen police review for those in the audience who want to get in touch with them?
Yeah, it's 999. This is a 408. 999-0897.
999-0897. 97. And the name of the group?
Human Rights Defense Committee.
Okay. Anything coming up that homeless activists in Santa Cruz here should know about to support you folks up in San Jose and what you're trying to do?
Well, we don't have any major demonstrations or major events coming up now. We are participating in a large conference which is being put on by, it's being organized by the Green Party at San Jose State University next weekend.
What's the where and when and how can you get to it?
San Jose State University. It's all day Saturday, April 5th, and Sunday, April 6th.
Mm-hmm.
If those dates match with the days. It's the first weekend in April. It's two all-day sessions. Homeless Alliance is going to be leading a workshop on Saturday afternoon. Human Rights Defense Committee is leading a workshop on Sunday morning, along with, there's tons of other groups involved, you know, environmental, labor, all different kinds of social interest groups.
Interesting.
So it's interesting, and then the basic theme, I guess, is the theme of the Nader campaign, which is to end corporate control, which I think would be very useful in advancing the causes of the homeless and the victims of police brutality.
Yeah, April 5th and 6th, San Jose State University. Is there a phone?
And we're out of time. You're listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Bathrobe Spears Broadside's on every Sunday at 11 o'clock. Join us next Sunday at the same time, same station, for hopefully more of the same or maybe some better stuff. Thanks again.
Because everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health.